Joining us today to discuss Gordon Parks and other topics from Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, E.R. Shipp, professor of journalism there. Michael Myers joins us from our New York Bureau, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. And George Curry joins us from Maryland. He's editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. This cold is going to kill me before anything else does. And I think E.R. is in our New York Bureau as well. Let's talk a little bit about Gordon Parks, if we can. E.R., talk to me about what is and who is a true Renaissance man.
He really was. And what I remember most and admire most about him was that he was so debonair. Even more so, I think, than James Baldwin, he was someone you looked to and went, wow. And the fact that he was so varied in his talents and could do all those things you've just described made one want to strive to be more like him. And it was all the more fascinating when you realize he was largely self-taught, something that I hope is not lost upon those people who constantly lament that our children are not being taught in schools. There are alternate ways to learn, and he shows that.
George Curry, here's an interesting point in terms of his foray into filmmaking and into Hollywood. Often he's given credit with Mario Van Peebles as starting the, quote, black exploitation films, but I'm sure that he and Mario Van Peebles would bristle at that because they did not see the films they were making as black exploitation, particularly Gordon Parks, obviously with The Learning Tree, but even Shaft.
Yeah, absolutely. They had other messages, though. But, you know, what I'm amazed by, E.R. kind of touched on, is his being self-taught. Gordon Parks dropped out of high school just like Peter Jennings dropped out of high school. I think Peter Jennings dropped out in the 10th grade. Yet he found these different mediums and excelled in each one of them. I mean, it would be considered a great accomplishment if you excel in one. But here you had somebody who could write, who was a photographer and a musician as well, and excel in all areas. And he said, like a lot of self-taught people, he said it was his fear of failure that drove him. And boy, it drove him straight to success.
Michael Myers?
Well, I'm reminded of that great line from, I think, the movie Sunset Boulevard, that when she says, "I was always big, it's the pictures that got small." Gordon Parks' career, particularly with Life magazine, he was the big picture. And when Life magazine was a major chronicler of life's social crisis, including poverty and the civil rights movement, Gordon Parks was the man. He reminds me of going back to the era of Roy Wilkins of the NAACP, who used to say what Gordon Parks' mother said to him, learn what the white boys learn, and no excuses, no excuses. We're going to miss that era. Because we're living in an era now of too many excuses. And even if you drop out of school, there are ways of learning what the white boys learn and the white girls learn.
Yeah, and we should note, and E.R. hit it on the head, Mr. Parks was so urbane in not only his work, but just his image, his spirit. And unfortunately, we were to have talked to him earlier a few months ago with a new book that he had released, but he was unfortunately too ill to be with us, and he will be missed, and we salute him. Now we'll move on to some of the topics that we normally cover during the roundtable. One of the interesting points here, we're seeing that we're hearing from the State Department that is throwing the gauntlet down and telling Iran that you've crossed the line. You need to suspend what they believe are nuclear activities going on in that country, or, according to the State Department, the UN Security Council will intervene, this is a quote, quite actively, end quote. George Curry, here again, the big stick being raised by the United States and the UN. Can you continue to afford to do so? Others will say certainly that they have to do so.
Well, the difference here, though, even though the United States made some overtures before going in Iraq, the U.S. this time seems to be genuinely trying to work with the United Nations. And if there's going to be such a foray into Iran, it has to be done by the international community and not just the United States. So I'm glad to see a different tone set even in this approach to the U.N.
Michael Myers?
Well, it's an all-else situation. All-else what? this is not the first time the United States has said this. And I think the significant part of this story is that this is the United States again speaking. The United States cannot speak for the United Nations. And although there's been a referral from a UN agency to the Security Council, it will be up to the Security Council to decide what to do about Iran and its nuclear machinations. In that regard, it seems to me that until the UN starts speaking, and we're not going to, this is just more sound and fury. Don't forget, Russia, which has interests in Iran, Russia still has that veto. And so the United States can't do anything in the Security Council unless they persuade Russia to go along.
That's true.
Shipp, here's the interesting point to me, and pick up on your point after that, but historically we've seen the United States and the United Nations have to deal with hot spots around the world, but what we are increasingly seeing is not only the growing number of hot spots, but the bigger muscle from governments and insurgents from these hotspots who are no longer afraid to push back against the United States.
That's true, and it may have always been true to some extent, but they didn't have the power to do so. And now they realize that the United States is stretched rather thin across a number of these so-called hotspots. It's interesting that the Secretary General of the United Nations is meeting with some of the parties, I believe today even, to try to figure out a diplomatic resolution to the issue. Yes, the United States is threatening, but I think everybody knows that it probably does not have the muscle to invade Iran to enforce its edicts.
George, any concern that, as many say, these are hollow threats in the sense that even though the United States in this instance has made the overture with the United Nations in lockstep seemingly, we continue to hear the concerns about the military, and one can only assume when you talk about quite aggressively, you're talking about military action, is spread too thin already.
Yeah, certainly you can make that argument, and that's why I think it's important to note that they are trying to work. We're trying to work more and more through the United Nations because the United States can't go out and do a single-handed do a battle again as the one we waged in Iraq. So it's necessary to go that route. But yeah, we are already overextended. No question about that.
I don't think there's a military U.S. military option here. I mean, the United States is having enough trouble recruiting people for the military. There is no military option for the United States. Our forces are virtually depleted.
So you think it's a hollow threat?
I think it's a hollow threat unless the U.S. and others can convince Russia that you bring economic sanctions and other kind of sanctions on Iran. But it's not going to be a military or a U.N. military situation, which is not
going to turn our attention to some new numbers that are coming out showing that the New York area will soon become clearly, and I hate to use these terms, forgive me for my stumbling, but you hate to, and ER, you know what I'm talking about here.
I know where
the idea that the New York area will soon be minority majority, if you will. New York City.
I do too. I absolutely do.
Yeah, forgive me. But in New York City since 1980 has been what is called by the press minority majority. We're seeing many parts of this country turn into that, ER. What is this saying to us?
Well, first of all, let's not confuse our children with math any more than we already have. I often will see students come back from visiting certain neighborhoods, and they will say something like, the majority of the people here, 90% of the people are minority, and I have to call them out in their mathematics. What we're really seeing with this latest study is that people are on the move, and they no longer feel compelled to reside in the major cities. They're moving out towards the suburbs. So I think the news here is that the suburban areas, the larger metropolitan areas, are becoming increasingly populated with people of color, including many immigrants from the Caribbean and South America.
Yeah, let's say at the top, we're talking about people of color being the majority. Let's simplify it. We're not in the minority. We're talking about people of color being the majority. And they've already been that in New York City since the 1980s. So what happens is this inner ring of suburbs, this is where you really see it happening. And also that you see, which is amazing to me, is that you also see a shift of African Americans returning south, so much so that Atlanta is poised to bypass Chicago in terms of the second highest number of African Americans after New York. So you see all these kind of demographic changes that's really going to affect the country, so much so that by shortly after the year 2050, whites will be a minority in this entire country.
So, Michael Myers, when do we actually start? And you saw me stumbling in the beginning because I hate the idea of minority, majority, et cetera, et cetera. When do we actually start the idea of understanding that when we talk about the majority in this country, we clump together whites no matter where they're from in Europe? If you look at the African diaspora, are we soon going to start to fight the idea of using majority for colored people?
No. You still lump together whites from wherever they're from, too. And the question is the white.
But that's what makes them the majority. So my point is, if you lump together colored people, particularly from the African diaspora, one can argue that they are now the majority.
No, I think what the problem is, what Sam Roberts' New York Times report was, it's opaque and it's facile. The mere numbers don't say enough to me. You have declining birth rates among whites in the United States. You have a significant amount of white flight. You have the notion that this is a melting pot simply because the people of color is now becoming majority population in the metropolitan areas, when we don't see any evidence of a melting pot. People are still living in segregated communities. How much interaction is there between Asians and blacks or Asians and Hispanics? How much interaction? And whites who still live in the city, where are they located? Are they in their gilded, gated communities? There's not a semblance of evidence given in the report about the rich-poor divide. So the numbers are just the beginning of a conversation as opposed to the end of a conversation.
It's probably more for the shock value for white Americans to realize that they are on the decline in certain areas. But it doesn't go far enough, as Michael says, in telling us what it all means. Will there be political coalitions drawing upon the numbers of these people of color, or is it just an interesting statistic?
Right. I don't think the reports were designed to do that. It was designed to show these great demographic changes, and there's other parts you got to deal with. I mean, you just really can't talk about the Latino community, the Hispanic community, and not realize that you're talking about a whole lot of different subgroups, some of them conflicting. So it's a mistake to even think that can be simplified. So it's not designed to do that. But I also think the other point here is that to see the decline for the first time in recent years, probably a century, where African Americans are declining in terms of being in New York while other immigrants are coming in, and that's the first time we've done that in years.
And obviously this can mirror some other areas and does, according to the study, across the country. All right, George Curry, Michael Myers, ER Shipp, thank you guys for joining us today.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank
right,
you.
Thank you.